Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. According to co-founder, bassist, singer, and songwriter Pat Vegas, it was Jimi Hendrix who talked the musicians into forming an all-Native American rock group. Vegas told record collector writer Jeremy Isaac, Hendrix was a friend of ours, and he was half Indian. Once he knew that we were Indian too, he used to come and hang with us because of that. Jimmy made me aware of my roots. He'd say, Native American is beautiful, man. Be proud of that. Redbone's story is interesting from more than one point of view. The band itself, of course, who had a great career with ups and downs, of course. The fact that the musicians were all Native Americans from different origins, their political implication, and the fact they were censored shows a very interesting political and social background of the U.S. nation. All this plus the fact that they produced a unique, powerful, and soulful music. The name Redbone itself is a Cajun term for a mixed race person, the band's members being of mixed blood ancestry. The band referenced Cajun and New Orleans culture many times in their lyrics and performing style. Now, the mid-70s were the period of big success, not only in the USA, but even more in Europe and especially in the Netherlands. Maggie, the Witch Queen of New Orleans, Come and Get Your Love, Wounded Knee, and even Susie Girl were big hits in many European countries, some reaching number one. This led to the band to tour and play almost nonstop during this period. They shared the stage at various times with Dr. Hook, Albert Hammond, and others. Highlights on U.S. tours including playing at Carnegie Hall in New York with Argent and Kiss, opening for Marvin Gaye at the Forum in Inglewood, California, sharing the bill with Parliament Funkadelic in Philadelphia, and playing with Steely Dan at the Convention Center in Las Vegas. Pat Vegas has continued to write music over the years. Some tunes had been recorded since 1980 with Lolly, of course, but also with Tony Bellamy for some songs. Finally, in 2005, Pat puts this work out on a new CD called One World. It was released in 2005 by a small independent record company. It was re-edited in 2009 and retitled as Peace Pipe. At the same period, Pat Vegas recreates the band with new musicians, and they tour mainly in the west of the United States since. In 2014, Come and Get Your Love experienced a resurgence in popularity and has been thoroughly embraced by a new generation when it was featured in the Marvel Studios film Guardians of the Galaxy as the first and many say most important song on a mixtape made for the film's hero, Peter Quill, Star-Lord. It was also included on the film's soundtrack album, which reached the number one on the Billboard Top 200 chart, where it remains. When released as a single in 1974, it was certified gold, selling well over a million copies, and it is a song that just does not fade away. There have been over 100 million hits on YouTube alone. Since 2015, Come and Get Your Love has been used as the theme song for Netflix-produced cartoon series F is for Family and the TV series Big Shrimpin'. Please welcome bassist, singer, songwriter, author, and co-founder of the legendary rock group Redbone, Pat Vegas, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Pat.
Hey, what's up, bro? What's up?
Did I get it all?
Wow, that was awesome. Nice.
Of course, I didn't mention your earlier career before Redbone, which was huge.
Right. That was something else. That was a whole other thing. That was for Chancellor Records. During those rock ages in the 70s.
You guys were huge in California.
I was on Chancellor Records with Bob Marcucci.
Right.
Fabian and Frankie Avalon, those guys. For the solo act that I did, and it was all right, you know. And then I was I was picked up by the Ventures on their record company. And then Lolly and I decided to put a group together, and that's when it happened. Jimmy would always say to us, "Hey man, let's put an Indian group together." He was ready to leave Warner Brothers and join us, you know, as part of one of the members of the band. And they wouldn't let him.
Really?
They wouldn't let him.
Man, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been something, man. Jimmy and Lolly and I and Tony and Pete. That would have been something.
You know, you and Lolly were so freaking talented, man. You know, you played so many different clubs. You were the big draw.
Gazzari's on the strip. Bill Gazzari.
Right.
It was like before the Whiskey and Go-Go, it was like the number one club in L.A. I mean, and they used to come from all over the world to party with us. Every actress that was on the screen, and every actor, Paul Newman, everybody was there dancing every night. Yeah, I had all the Monkees and all the and David there, all the guys.
And you guys were in a surf group called Avantis?
The Avantis, yeah.
Yeah, Avanti.
Yeah, we did that for Bob Marcucci on Chancellor Records. And it went to the top 20, 50, something like that.
Right.
25. And we toured with the Beach Boys at that time.
You guys had a hit. You had a hit called Wax 'Em Down. Yeah.
Yeah, we were doing all kind of genres, you know. We just wanted to play, you know. And Mike Kowalski, who later on joined the Beach Boys and was with him for 25 years, but he was our drummer at the time. And his dad is a movie director. I mean, his brother is a movie director.
Right.
He did Rawhide and a bunch of other shows. We did Bonanza. So we played for the 25th Bonanza celebration birthday party.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was cool back then.
Yeah. Great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
Yeah, it was a good show.
You guys did a lot of writing for other artists, like Tina Turner, yeah. Sonny and Cher, James Brown, even Elvis, right?
Yeah, and Elvis, we did some writing for him. Lolly and I played on the album and on the film score, Kissing Cousins.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. We were in the studio for 3 days recording that track. For Red West, you know, his brother.
Sure.
And on the rhythm guitar was Johnny Rivers.
Wow.
James Burton. We had all the Elvis musicians on the set, you know, recording. And it was great. Lolly and I, you know.
I had Ray Walker on the show, who was one of the Jordanaires. He's a nice guy, really really good guy.
Oh, he's a real nice guy.
Yeah,
real nice. I met him all.
Yeah. What was Elvis like? What was your impression of Elvis?
My impression was he was very, you know, quiet, you
right?
Know, kind of subdued, you know, laid back. You know, I mean, he might have been different with everybody else, but when he was in the studio with us, he was very laid back, and he complimented us and said, "Man, you guys sound great."
You guys were awesome. You guys as a team were awesome, man. You could sing anything.
Yeah, we could do anything, you know, and that's what we prided ourselves on, the fact that we could play anything, any kind of music. You know, we even did some jazz some jazz musicians playing with a set of jazz at one time. We jammed with Jimmy Smith.
Right.
Jammed with some heavyweight musicians. Yeah. But that was for the experience. We wanted to experience that, you know.
Right.
You know.
You guys, I saw you on YouTube singing, you and Lolly singing La Bamba. You did a great job on Shindig.
Right, we did that.
Yeah.
That was fun, but Shindig was a real big show. I mean, it was like the show in the entire world. And Lolly and I got a chance. Well, anyway, the guy that produced it came to see us at Guthrie.
Right.
And he saw how crazy the people were getting on our music and how crazy it was. He heard it through La Bamba, and he said, I want that on my show. So he grabbed us up. You know, we did several.
Weren't you, like, in the house band of Shindig?
Yes.
You were in the house band, yeah.
Yeah, we were regulars.
Wow.
Yeah.
I interviewed Trini Lopez, man. He's still going strong. Did you know Trini?
Trini was a great artist. I mean, he worked at another place down the street called PJ's.
Right, right.
And he used to have him packed in there. And you used to play him and what's his name? Oh, God damn, I can't think of this. Scotty on drums. Mickey Rourke. Forget his last name, was on drums.
Right.
And when the record, what was the name of his record again? His hit record that came out on Reprise. See, we were on Reprise records at the time too, with the Sinatra's
record. Right, right, right.
And his record took off. If I Had a Hammer, just took
if
off.
If I Had a Hammer, yep.
And he came to me and asked me if I would go on tour with him.
Really?
Yes, I was the first one he asked to play bass with him on tour. And if I'd have done that, I'd have been pretty well off.
Did well.
Anyway, so Mickey wanted me to play bass. So anyway, I couldn't at the time because I didn't want to leave Lolly. I strung out, you know.
Yeah.
Hanging, you know. Leave him hanging, you know, without a... Because we had worked so hard to get it together, you know.
Yep.
So I took him to the Carolina Pines on Sunset, and I introduced him to the bass player that he had. I forget. Anyway, I gave him the gig. I said, yeah, man, I got a gig for you. And we found out it was Trini Lopez. You went crazy. He said, I owe you my firstborn. I said, you sure do, man.
Yeah, Trini had a lot of help from Sinatra, man.
Oh, yeah. Sinatra loved him. You know, he used to be in that movie. What was it called?
The Dirty Dozen.
Dirty Dozen.
Yeah. Yeah,
I jammed with Trini several times, and he loved my playing, so
yep.
He wanted me to go on the road with him.
Yeah. Sinatra told him not to do any more movies because he was going to ruin his music career. So that...
He's a lousy actor. He wasn't made for the camera, you know. He could sure play that rhythm guitar and sing, you know.
Yeah. He was a showman for sure.
Yeah.
So what is it with you and Lolly with rabbit movies, man? You, the Nasty Rabbit, and then...
I know. this kid that used to... This guy, what's his name? They used to come to the club.
Right.
And dance to our music. I think he fell in love with Lolly or something. But anyway, he loved our music. He loved the way we played. He fell in love with Lolly's guitar playing in mine, you know. And he said, man, I want you guys to come with us. My dad's doing a movie. And I said, well, sure, why not? And I went and we played and we jammed. He was so excited playing with us. He sweat out of two shirts. He was so excited, you know. And we played and you know, finally the movie came up and he got us a party and it was fine.
Yeah, you were in the Nasty Rabbit movie and It's a Bikini World from 67. I saw that movie. Yeah. I saw It's a Bikini World with Deborah Wallace. Yeah, it was a good movie. I liked it. I saw you guys in it.
Yeah, we did that. How about the movie Eka? Did you see that?
I didn't see that one.
Oh, okay, that was another one done by Arch Hall.
Right. When did that one come out?
Yeah. We've done a lot of little bit parts in a bunch of movies, you know, and it was fun.
Some of the other songs I saw on YouTube with you and Lolly, man. You did Hard Day's Night, which you did awesome job. I mean, the girls were screaming just like you guys were the Beatles.
Just like we we did it. You know, I did it. Yeah, it was good. We loved that song. We loved doing that. We could imitate other artists real easy, you know.
You guys were great. You guys were awesome, man.
Part of the attraction was the fact that when we did somebody else's record, it sounded like the record.
Exactly.
And that was our goal.
Yeah, you did In the Midnight Hour, which was awesome. You did and Robot Walk. That was a great song.
That went to about maybe 54 or 30 or 44 on the chart. That was also a chart record. And I think that dance is going to come back.
It probably will.
Another 5 years, it's going to be the dance of the decade, you know?
That'll be awesome.
Awesome for me, and for us, that'd be great.
Pat, you go way back, man. People don't realize, you know, how long, the longevity that you've had in the music industry. 1961, you had a single called Want to Be a Movie Star, right?
That's right. And you know who produced it?
Who's that?
Gary Paxton and Kim Fowley.
Really? Kim Fowley? Really?
You know who Gary Paxton is, right?
Sure.
He's a great country music producer and has written a bunch of hits. And Kim Fowley's the guy that has the girl group.
The Runaways.
That's Kim Fowley.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that, huh?
Did not know that.
Yeah, how do you know that?
I know everything.
You're well informed, man, I got to tell you.
You also did I've Traveled the Whole Wide World, right?
That's right. You're not going to believe this, but this is the story. I swear to God, this is the truth. I wrote I Traveled the Whole Wide World.
Right.
And it turns out that there's, which I never read, there was a book out called I Traveled the Whole Wide World.
Right.
Written by a lady by the name of Patricia or something. Meaning my first coming or second coming or something.
Right.
But it was a lady writer who wrote I Traveled the Whole Wide World.
Huh.
Yeah.
The other one you did, let's see, was it That Smile? That was another song.
In my other life, I was a female writer.
Right.
I must have been a whore, I don't know. Because I like party, huh?
Yeah. You know that YouTube video you did about your life, showing you're in the car, showing
oh,
all...
Right.
That's awesome. Right. That is incredible. I love that, man. It's so natural, right. You know?
Yeah, well, that was for... I did that with a friend of mine from Holland.
Right.
Yeah, she did the filming and drove me all places. I drove, you know, but she wanted to know that story, so I did it for her.
I think it's great.
It was a thing. Yeah. It was great. I thought it was funny.
I love the history, knowing that, you know, what the clubs and what they're doing now, and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, now it's nothing like it used to be.
Yeah.
When I was doing clubs, I mean, it was like the place to be in the country, in the world. It was like to be that they used to come from New York everywhere.
Yeah.
Sunset. There were people walking on the street so cars couldn't drive through. It was so crowded. I mean, it was such a happening, you know, back then.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, you're talking about Gazzari's and Bumps Blackwell.
Yeah. Bumps, the man. He's the man.
He was the man, huh?
He's a genius, man. He's a real genius. I met a few people that I thought was very talented, but this man was a genius. I mean, I can honestly tell you, he had it all. He discovered Shorty Rogers, Quincy Jones, Aretha Franklin, Sam Cooke.
Wow.
And the list goes on. Little Richard, and he produced them too for specialty.
Yeah.
And then he said, "Okay, I discovered Fat Molly too." He said, because he did, and he introduced us to who was that DJ that started named it Rock and Roll?
Oh yeah, Alan Freed.
He introduced to Alan Freed.
Yeah.
I sat there with Alan Molly, and I sat there talking to Alan Freed for about an hour. It was unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah,
he was such a great man, you know.
Poor Alan, man. He got a bum steer, you know that? The guy coined rock and roll, you know, and they really treated him like crap. It's a shame.
He called it rock rock and roll. He's the man that named.
That's right.
And they ignored him.
Yep.
The industry ignored him for some reason. They have a habit of doing that.
Yeah, they do. It's a shame. It's a real shame.
People, you could be right in front of their face and they just pretend they don't see you.
I know. Yeah, sometimes.
Like so, me and Lolly for something.
Sometimes I feel like that.
Yeah. You know, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
They should acknowledge those people that have given something to the industry.
That's right.
You know, and now they go and they get the applause and the kudos to someone that just hit, got lucky with one hit.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's just very unfair and fickle, you know, the business.
Right, it is.
They don't give credit to the people they should be.
They never do.
Foundation.
Nope. But you guys should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just on you and Lolly by itself without Redbone, you know.
For example, that's the truth. And
yeah.
I believe that.
You guys are pioneers.
They tend to ignore you. I don't know, maybe they feel inadequate or maybe they feel like, I don't know what it is. They don't feel they're good enough to honor you or whatever. But it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Now they'll go on as somebody that I studied in business.
Right.
And put him in the Hall of Fame instead of the guy that found him, you know.
Right.
You know, like Creedence Clearwater.
Yep.
You know, they opened for us at PJ's. We were there for a month, and they were there for a month, and we did our set, and then they do up their set, and they used to do a bubblegum music, you know, like all kind of, you know, Bobby Rydell and stuff like that.
Right.
And we had a Cajun set that we did. We used to put on overalls. Old t-shirts and come out like that, and we do a Cajun set, but nothing but Cajun music.
Huh. Right?
And these guys sit there and listen to our Cajun set every night. They get through their set, they sit there and listen to us. And next thing I heard, out of San Francisco, a group called Creedence Clearwater Revival, who actually, the real name was Willie and the Poor Boys.
Right.
And down here at Creedence Clearwater doing our changes, the changes that we play to our Cajun music, like Nicky Hokey, you know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I hear these guys in the album doing Cloud Mary, which we sang about.
Yep.
And the chord structure was the same as one of our songs, everything. And these guys went ahead and ripped it off, you know. So I called Tom Donahue in San Francisco, who owned the label, right? Right?
Yeah, yep.
And I told Tom, hey man, these guys ripped us off.
Right.
Because he knew we were doing Cajun music. And Tom Donahue, because we played in San Francisco. Anyway, so they ripped us off and he didn't even come over and say, hey Pat, thanks man. Thank you and your brother for the inspiration or whatever, you know?
Right.
As it should be. As it should be as gentlemen, you know?
I agree.
No, they pretend they didn't know us, they pretend they didn't heard of us. And they pretend that they did it all. So later on, Tom Donahue, when he found out about it, he got so pissed off.
Right.
He pulled the name and fired him.
Huh.
He kept all the money. We had friends out there, but he didn't know it. They didn't know it.
Yeah, nobody was doing Cajun music back then.
Nobody. No, you got to understand something, bro.
Yep.
I ain't created it.
Yep.
I came up with the name Cajun Rock.
Right.
All my ink sheet that I had done back then said medium Cajun beat for medium Cajun rock.
Right.
My ink sheets. And it didn't exist.
It didn't.
No. Zydeco is the name of the music from that area.
Right, right.
Called Zydeco. But I invented Cajun rock. Lolly and I actually played it and did it with a song, Nicky Hokey.
Yeah.
Which PJ Colby recorded, became a big hit.
The only guys I know that was doing it was much later, and that was like Dr. John and
you gotta listen to this.
Uh-huh.
Dr. John played keyboards on Crazy Cajun Cakewalk Band.
Uh-huh.
I hired him. He's married to one of my old friends.
Right.
His wife was somebody that I grew up with, Lorraine Sherman.
Uh-huh.
And then he married her. And then I hired him for a session.
Yep.
He was just playing studio work.
Yeah, he was a session guy, right.
He was a session guy. No, webinar.
Yep.
Well, anyway, so I hired him to do the section with me for Encrease Cape and Cape Walk Band. 2 weeks later, his wife told me, so he's changing his name to Dr. John. So we influenced him.
Yep.
We influenced most everybody in that genre, you know?
Yeah.
The kids and music. And, but I didn't make any fuss about it. I didn't say anything. I just let it go, let it ride.
Yeah.
And I believe what goes around comes around.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The other guy who just passed away, Tony Joe White.
Yeah.
He was good. I had him on the show. He's a nice guy, but he did a lot of he was from that area too. So
but you gotta understand, Pope Salad Annie's
yep.
Hokey.
Yeah. Yep.
That song. If he took it from the same song, same melody almost.
Same thing.
That kid is Mickey Hokey. So,
yep.
So he inspired him. Not only that, but I was living with Bobby Gentry for a while.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
So I was working at the place called the Red Velvet, and they used to have a modeling show.
Right.
Negligee at noon, you know? So I went there at noon to pick up my check.
Uh-huh.
Week, and I saw her walk by me, and I followed her right into the dressing room. She looked so great.
Man. Yeah, she was awesome.
She had a great body.
Yeah.
I followed her into the dressing room, and I got to know her, and stayed with her for a while, and I played. She played me with this music that she had written, which was all show tunes, you know, like cabaret.
Yeah.
So I played the Nicky Hokey, and she said, "Play that again." I played it again and again and again and again, and she got it down. Like one day, I took her in the studio and recorded her on the music.
Right.
She got demos and on the music, and then after she heard Nicky Hokey, she came back 2 weeks later and said, "Pat, look, listen to this." And she played Old Billy Joe, which I played bass on.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
So, unbeknownst to me, she took it to Capitol Records.
Right.
Somebody else took the credit for it. So, and they put it out and became a monster hit.
Yeah.
But if you look on the album, Old Billy Joe, there's only one other name besides hers on that album, and it's Pat Biggins.
Really? Huh.
Look at it.
You taught me something today. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What happened to Bobby Gentry? Did you ever find out what happened to her?
Well, you got to understand something. If it's in your blood, if you create something, it's you, and it'll go forever. But if you don't, and you pick it up somewhere, that's as far as it goes. She had no more material, no more mind to expand on it.
Really?
She got all that from Nicky Hokey. I can't believe how much she got from Nicky Hokey.
Yeah.
That one song inspired her into doing an album that she had a hit album with my name on it, which I was proud of. And that's as far as it could go, you know. Couldn't go any further.
Yeah,
she just had a follow-up hit album. That was incredible. She didn't have enough material, I guess.
Yeah, she just dropped off the face of the earth, man. No one knows.
She said something in the media that I had all the material, I'm taking the material, and I still do.
Right. You guys must have had, I talked to Tommy James a few times. You must have known Tommy, right? Tommy James and Shondell? Yeah. He, you know the story with him and Morris Levy, right? That, you know. All
no.
But did you guys have some of those club owners that were kind of, you know, a little shady?
No. I was really good with all the guys that we worked with. We got along great.
Right.
We got along great.
Yeah, he signed up with the biggest gangster in New York. So that's
it. My guys were really nice people. Gentlemen, you know, and they treated us well, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything negative to say about anybody.
Yep.
I pride myself in that, you know. I don't talk about people behind their back, you know. I don't keep shouting at people. I don't do that.
Well, that's a good way to be. That's a good way to be.
Yeah.
What else was your role at Gazzari's? I know you were like the house band. You were there for a long time, but did you guys?
Four years. Anyway, I hired the talent. I was in charge of that.
Oh, you hired the talent also.
Yeah, I was and they were coming audition for me, not for Bill, because Bill had other things to do. I said, "Take the audition, listen to that term, what you think." So I tried this. I said,
Right.
So I booked 80 or almost on one of their appointments. Right?
Yep.
You know that?
Yeah.
Eddie Brooks is a great actor, and he's like, but he was in the band called the Pacific Ocean. And I hired them, and they went over great. Bill Russell.
Uh-huh.
It was a long, long time. And then one day, this guy walks in with his shoes and his coat pockets. And a bottle of whiskey in one pocket and a bottle of Benny's in the other. You know? And he came over and said, and strolled over and he said, yeah, I'd like to go to Donnie's first. So that's for that next week.
Right.
I said, all right. So they came back the following week, and they got up and auditioned, and they were playing some kind of space music or something. But it had nothing to do with the club, and the people in the club wanted to dance, right?
Right.
Wanted to dance, and they wanted to love the music, but they did something that was, I think it was self-indulgent, you know what I'm saying? They did it for themselves.
Right.
But they liked it. The people didn't. I mean, I knew the people wouldn't like it, but now that's going to happen. It's not going to happen. You got to play dance, man. You got to dance.
Sure.
Dance. And he said, yeah, we won't do anything. Jim said, Jim Morrison said, we'll do anything.
Huh.
I said, all right, Jim. So I went and said, I went to listen to what I said. And listen to, Tootsie Connie's video and the stuff. It's dance music. He said, okay, we'll spend the night, we'll stay over here. And so we went upstairs and had a couple of shots of whiskey. And then I went downstairs to my set. They sat there, and we had fun. And, you know, they're pretty, the guys in the doors were pretty quiet, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't speak much. They just nodded their head while I put Jim did most of the talking. Right,
right. Right.
So we went up and played our set. And did what we played. We played, I've been a loco, ladies, been a loco. Que yo no quiero tener problemas con este loco. Latin, chop-chop kind of beat, right?
Uh-huh.
And the Doors' career was based on all their career and all their hits were based on that one chapter, I think. Because it's like, I mean, it's a local. Then I turned on the radio. Come on, baby, light my fire.
Yep, yep.
It was the same melody almost.
Wow.
But every song he did after that was like that one song I played for me, a local.
Huh.
And he used to show up at my house at 5:30 in the morning telling me, I can't go to sleep with me, he's messed up. So you know, so I'd hang out with him for a couple of hours, you know, and give him coffee and eat him, you know. And then I put him in the academy house to record music, you know. So I did it several times with him.
Hmm.
He was my friend.
Well, that's awesome, man. I know you got a book out. Is all this stuff in your book?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone needs to buy your book, man. It's got that. You got some great stories. Unbelievable.
Oh, man. A lot of them are in that book. You know, a lot of them in the book that I get.
Yeah, I'm gonna promote it at the end of the show and make sure everybody buys it.
Thank you, bro. That's great.
Definitely.
Anyway, Jim Morrison basically was a really nice kid, really nice guy.
Right.
We got along great, you know. And he talks about an Indian in his movies and his music. That Indian is me.
Uh huh. You know what? That's cool.
he mentioned a lot. He mentioned that the spiritual Indian is in him, but he never gave me credit for it.
Oh, wow. You're the Indian. That's awesome. That is really cool.
I kept quiet. I never said anything. Loose lips and shit, so.
Yeah.
So I kept my mouth shut.
You know, I showed my, you know, I always show my wife who I'm going to interview. So I go on YouTube and I got Redbone on Midnight Special. That, you know, that's a memorable show, you know.
Well, it's very well done.
Yeah, very well done.
Wolfman was a good friend of mine, you know. Let me tell you this little story about Wolfman. We'd go up to the house to visit with him and we'd hang out with him, you know.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, he was an awesome leader guy. Anyway, one day, good people. One day I go up there and we're sitting around laughing, talking, and he's doing his radio show, right?
Uh huh.
So he do the show, which I've never done before, and walk to the kitchen. And I said, what do I do? He said, I don't know, figure it out. He just dumped it on me, right? So I pushed the buttons, you know, and the top of the radio a little bit, and, you know, bullshit a little bit, and then I put a plate of record. And he said, that was well done, and then do it again. Yeah, but he was funny like that. He used to pull that shit on me, you know.
Yeah. I met Wolfman a few times. Good guy.
He's a great guy, man. Great guy. He was beautiful, man.
He didn't take care of himself, though. He was smoking like crazy when I saw him. And he was eating French fries and had so much salt on the French fries. It was ridiculous, you know?
I don't know. Maybe he's gone out to a better place. I'm not sure.
Yeah. He died so young, too, you know?
I hope he went to a better place. You know, his name was Bob Smith.
Yeah, that's right. Bob Smith.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That Midnight Special performance was cool. That was Tony doing the Indian dance, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of dance was he doing?
He was doing that.
What was a, I mean, you know, was it a, like a rain dance or something? Or
no, it was a soul dance, we called it.
A soul dance.
Soul dance.
That was so cool. When he came out and, yeah.
Yeah. It was for Wovoka. You know who Wovoka was?
Yes.
Wovoka was the spiritual advisor that saved an entire village. And the story went around. It was like a tale.
Right.
Among Indians, like a story that was told by many, many, many wise men.
Right.
Because the cavalry was, Custer was planning to invade this village. And wipe everybody out. He had already done it a couple of times, but he planned on this one.
Right.
So they called Wovoka to come and help them out, the tribe.
Huh.
So Wovoka showed up, and he made them dance for 7 days and seven nights.
Really?
Dance. The ghost dance.
Right.
He created this shirt. He had a shirt that he designed. And he made them all make these shirts and all wear the shirts and do the ghost dance. He said, when we do this dance, we will be lifted into the sky among the clouds, and Carson will just ride on through, not even see us. And it happened exactly that way.
Wow.
Men came with their rifles and guns drawn, ready to kill everybody, and just drove on through, and nobody was there, and he just kept going. And then he lowered them down to the earth, and continued dancing. It was called the Ghost Grammar Dance.
That's awesome.
I know a song we have called Nietzsche Trance.
Right.
That's about it. That's about it. That's all about it.
You know, there's a lot of rock stars that have shamans. You know, they sit with a shaman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to get the advice. And you see, the wisdom that the Indian has in the present, it goes back centuries. It's not just a lot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And feel the vibe and feel with how you feel. But these wise men did it always. And the thing that must have come to them in the middle of the night, you know, some of those nights.
Right.
The nights that must have been unbelievable.
Huh. That's awesome.
Yeah, so the wisdom came from the spirits and the gods, you know.
Yeah.
From up above, you know. I see the spirits all the time, you know. I live with them, you know, and I've got a rapport, you know, because I'm a medicine man, too.
Sure. You speak Spanish fluent?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you know, I'm half Cuban.
No kidding. I love that Cuban rhythm. I love that. You know, my brother-in-law played with all the different Cuban musicians.
Yeah.
Son-in-law was married to my older sister.
Uh-huh.
And they called him Crowbar.
Crowbar, huh.
Crowbar, but his name was Manuel Ramos.
Ramos, yep.
Manny Ramos. And he played with Tito Puente.
Oh, yeah.
With Pierce Prado, with everybody.
Celia Cruz,
everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. Like, he was one of the most popular percussionist.
Yeah, my mom is Cuban, and I grew up in a Spanish speaking household too. My abuela, my tías.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, man.
That's a beautiful thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's sympathetic, and it's got a lot of love, man.
Oh, yeah. Cuban people are very, very nice, very humble, very down-to-earth, hard workers.
They're very caring a lot.
Yeah, they do.
And they stick together, you know.
They do.
That's beautiful, too. Yeah.
You know, I had a business in D.C., retail electronics, and one day John Voight, the actor, came in. He does a lot with the American Indians, and he brought in a descendant of Geronimo. It was the guy looked just like Geronimo. You know, he was all in his gear and everything. He was such a nice. He hugged everybody. What a nice guy.
John Voight did that, huh?
John Voight, yeah. He did a lot for, you know.
I'm really surprised. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
John Voight was a great actor.
Yep.
I love what he did in Midnight Cowboy.
That was a great movie.
he was awesome.
He was good.
Yeah, he's done a lot of good work.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about Redbone now. I showed my wife you on the Midnight Special, and she had such a crush on you. She said, "What a handsome man! You know, you're a really good looking guy. Not that you're not now, but
tell her I haven't changed a bit."
Yeah, she said, "Man, that guy's handsome." you must have had a lot of girlfriends back then.
Oh my God, you have no idea.
That's another book.
That's another book.
Yeah.
And all good things, you know. I got nothing but good things to say about people anywhere.
Right.
I got nothing negative to say. I won't dwell on that.
That's awesome. That's good. That's the best way to be, man.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when The Witch Queen of New Orleans came out. I love the song.
Oh, man. Thank you so much.
That was a big hit. And again, that was your Cajun style, right?
That's right. That's the part of the Cajun thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
We were doing Cajun way back when. Anyway, I was asleep with my girlfriend.
All right.
We were lying in bed.
Right.
And we went to sleep around 7 o'clock in the evening, real early. And at midnight, it was exactly midnight, I was lifted out of the bed, sort of like lifting. And something lifted me out of the bed, and I was sitting inside the bed, and she was saying, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know." She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Okay, give me a paper and pencil."
Yep.
She gave me a paper and pencil, and I swear to God, in 2 minutes, I wrote Witch Queen of New Orleans.
Wow.
All the lyrics, all the things, the way it went down, exactly the way it went down.
That's cool.
And I gave Lolly arthritis for putting it on tape for me.
That's cool. Yeah, I hear stories like that from other artists, you know. If something comes to them in the middle of the night, like, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely inspirational, you know.
That was a great song.
It was about a real person, you know. It was a real person, real at all. It was real.
Really?
And she lived in New Orleans. She was she danced for money, you know, on the street.
Uh-huh.
You know, and her husband's name was Dr. John.
Is that right?
How does that correlate? Yeah. Her husband was Dr. John, and he was a musician, and she sang and danced while he played. And she was summoned by the Queen of England.
Right.
England. And she made the trip and spent a week or so, 2 weeks with the Queen of England over matters of war, you know. Over the, because I think it was the French, those Spaniards that were going to attack England.
Right.
And she said to her, "Take all your ships and move them to the other side of the island so they don't see them."
Right.
They were coming and destroy the ships. So the ships were moved. The enemy came, saw that there was nothing to destroy, so they left.
Huh.
She was responsible for that.
That's a hell of a story. I didn't know. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a movie, you know, and I can write that stuff, but what somebody else is going to say, "I got it.
Yeah.
The Well, you and I should write that story about the way Queen Maria the Bull. I know all the details.
Yeah.
She met with the Queen of England.
Wow. And then 1973, you guys, you wrote, We Were All Wounded at Wounded Knee. I don't understand why, what is the controversy about that song? I don't see anything wrong with playing that on the air, especially after all the protest music we heard in the 60s, you know?
Obviously, somebody of great power in the government.
Doesn't make sense.
Put a stop to it, because it was a beautiful thing. The way I did it with a writer by the name of Sandy Baranowski.
Right.
You know the comedian Sandy Baron?
Yeah,
He did Broadway Dandy Rose for the comedian, what was his name? Woody Allen.
Woody Allen.
He was real good friends with Woody Allen, but that movie, Broadway Dandy Rose, was about Sandy Baron.
Okay.
Anyway, and Sandy and I met on an airplane on a flight.
Right.
Out of Philadelphia. He was doing a show, and he told me that we talked and laughed. He was a funny guy, great comedian. He used to write for Lenny Bruce.
Yep.
And you know, he got right. So anyway, so they thought the song was too. I don't know what the hell they thought the song was. It was number one on every chart and every radio station in New York.
That's right.
And they banned it in America.
Very stupid.
very weird.
Very weird is right.
But I can claim that I got a song banned in America. Now that's heavy.
I mean, that was, you know, Wounded Knee was a horrible thing, you know. Why not publicize it, you know, let everybody know about it?
Let me tell you what we did with Sandy Knight. We took it and made it a positive.
Uh-huh.
We said that we were all wounded with Wounded Knee.
Sure, yeah.
It
was a well-written song.
Yeah. Sandy and I did that together.
Huh.
We wrote the song and recorded it and had it pressed and out in 5 days. And on the 10th and the 8th day, it was number one in Europe. It's an amazing story. That's the story in itself. Anyway, she wouldn't pay for the session.
Unbelievable.
So I paid my money. I put my money in. I paid for the session on and night. And they wouldn't have to rip it for me.
It's crazy.
Yes. I drove to Santa Maria to the record plant is, and I walked in and I talked to someone that worked in there. I gave him the master. He said, "Sure, I'll bring him up." He said, "All I need is $500. How much will it cost me?" He said, "Blah, blah, blah, blah." So I paid him. He gave me $500 in a box. I carried the money in my arm to Europe, and it's the biggest record in the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? And you still could be wrong this time.
Huh. You know, Mark Lindsay did Cherokee Nation. I mean, that could have been, they could have done something for that too, really, right?
Yeah. For what? For what it means?
I mean, that song made it. I mean, they didn't ban that one.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't ban that.
No. I don't get it.
What it means was, of course, massacre by the cavalry.
Well, it was history. It was true, you know.
It was a dying snow.
Yep.
And the first thing is, can you take that? No one wants to remember that.
Yeah.
Especially though there were families involved. They don't want to remember that, but they don't know. But trying to heal all wounds, you know, they got traits and things like that.
Yeah.
They're traits and they're something to keep them from. America's not going to move forward. We're at the bottom of the scale of the popularity. We're at number 26. Way down. You know, France needs to be the most powerful, most loved country in the world. And the only thing that's going to happen is that we own up to our mistakes, you know.
Yeah.
You know, come out and say, okay, we take the blame for that. We need to back along. But we're asking for forgiveness.
Right.
Forgive us. And it starts new together.
Yep.
But then it comes time to be, when we're back there in space dealing with other planets, I want the Native Americans to be sitting at that table when they make decisions.
Right.
I mean, they're being left out, you know, and that's my main quest.
Sure.
I don't want them left out, and it's in a way like it don't matter. You know, I want you to be sitting at that table of representatives that represent all the tribes and make decisions.
Yep.
This world, you know.
What do you think about the American Indian taking over casinos?
I think it's a political thing. I'm repeating myself, but anyway, the truth was that we used to play at all the longhouses on the reservation.
Right.
All the longhouses, we'd go in there and play, and they could only squeeze in like maybe 300, 400 people. But we played them all along before there were streams. We played all the reservations and all the longhouses.
Uh-huh.
And whatever buildings they had that we could play in. And I used to say to them, I was unaware that they had all this land, and all this land was, I loved to shelter life. I lived in the city. You know, my mom knew all that, my dad, but I didn't. But when I saw the land that was in the possession that they had, I started going around telling anybody at the radio interviews, why don't they build a mini casino? Why don't they build some bingo parlors?
Right.
Build some bingo parlors to make money here.
Sure.
Some casinos, mini casinos and stuff, you know. But I told them, because my point was that, you know, I've gone to churches that play bingo. I take churches, every church in California has a bingo day.
Right.
Wednesday.
Right.
Bingo, you know, and if the church can do that, why can't you put up bingo parlors? Doing something with the land, you know, like something positive to make money. And I'll be damned if a year later I hear about Boxwood Casino.
It's huge. It's huge.
And after that, Larry Hayward, he was such a good friend of ours. He loved it. And then he loved him. He was the head of the track, you know? And Larry. He told us that he hired us, and he had kept us that he could pay us an incredible amount of money. But he appreciated what we had done, what I had said, you know.
Right.
Because it started a chain reaction across the country with casinos. And he hired me every day to perform and paying these large amounts of money for the idea, or at least thinking of them, you know, thinking of us.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen that way. I think I'm being ignored now. Because pretending I'm crazy or something. Right. You're crazy like a fox.
But we got the Seminole Indians here.
All I can do is plant seed.
Yeah.
So call me here, and it's what's the guy that planted Johnny, the guy who planted all the seeds around the world.
Right.
What was his name? Johnny Appleseed?
Johnny Appleseed.
That's me. Johnny Appleseed. That's what I got to call me.
Johnny Appleseed. Well,
I go around planting seeds, and people do it. They do it, but they forget what they heard.
I know. You're right. You're 100% right. You're like you're a pioneer, man. You're.
They forget. They forget that. No one ever comes back to you and say, "Hey, man, I want to thank you for this."
I know.
Here, man, here's $100,000. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Or here's a bag of popcorn. Thanks. No. Nothing.
Have you done okay with the songwriting though, as far as royalties?
Yes, I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing all right.
Good.
I've got my children now that look after me too.
Right. Good.
My son PJ is doing real well.
Oh yeah, what's he doing?
Keep that name in mind. PJ Vegas.
PJ Vegas, what's he doing?
He's a singer songwriter. He writes incredible. He sings, and I'm performing with him now. We're going to Canada next month to do a big show, the big thing there.
Okay, I'll promote him.
Yeah, remember Canada? We're going to be there in Winnipeg.
Okay, are you still doing anything with some of the, with Redbone or no?
Yeah, that's what we're we're doing, me and my son, Brendan, synthesizers, and we have a drummer, a keyboard player, a guitar player, me and PJ.
So okay.
And we go around doing shows, like we just did one the other day at the theater downtown LA. People love it. It really is powerful.
Yeah, you got to come to Florida, man.
Oh, yeah, well, book us, man. Book PJ Vegas and me, and I come along.
Okay. I'll do it.
Yeah. Do it, man. And you got to hit this group like that now. The PJ night. It's fat. Big.
I want to talk about Come and Get Your Love real quick, a 1974 hit single. Incredible song. You know, it's so R&B. You know, Lolly did an incredible job singing like an R&B singer, you know?
Yeah, great vocal, man. He was hiring Kelsey's nuts. You know, Kelsey's a green giant.
Yep.
That's we went in studio. He tried to do it, and we sang it, and we played. We made tracks down, but he kept trying to sing, and he couldn't quite get it.
Right.
You know, and besides that, Pete's wife came to serve him. He said, "Well, Pete was quite a little suspicious." And now that brought us down. That kind of brought Pete down. And
right.
So anyway, Lolly kept trying, and it just didn't. It wasn't happening. Finally, after he mellowed out and got feeling good and relaxed, you know, and about the 25th take, he said, "Pat, I can do it. I can do it." Vocal. I said, "Lolly, we've done 30 of them, and it's just not taking groove on it, man." And he says, "I can do it now. I feel it." But he had a little more to drink, you know what I'm saying? He was feeling good, and he said, "I can do it now, Pat." But yeah, how he could hardly stand. But I had faith in him.
Yeah.
I had faith that he could. If he looked at me and said it, and looked in my eyes and said, "I can do it."
Right.
I had faith. I saw it, you know?
Yep.
So he went in the studio, set up, turned the lights down low, and plugged him in. And man, that's the vocal you hear. It's magic.
Incredible.
It's magic because it took that many hours to get it.
Huh.
To get him to feel that, what he was saying.
Yeah, he was great. Great singer. Yeah.
That moment. And one take, he did. Boom, that was it.
Huh.
And the record was coming out. And the people at CBS was about to drop it, so they heard that.
Yeah, right.
So here's the thing is, they were about to drop it, right? We got the record. We took I had them press me another 500 like they did before, remember?
Yeah.
And I took it to all the local radio stations along the West Coast.
Right.
All my friends, people that I knew at MET, you know. We took the record to all the radio stations one by one like that. And all of a sudden, Come Get Your Love was number one on all these radio stations. All the charts came out number one. So I went to Clyde. And he said, "Clyde, you want to produce ourselves. We don't want nobody else to produce us, right?"
Right.
But he assigned us producers. So we sat with him at Beverly Hills Hotel. He was with Amit Erdogan.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "All right, I'm here. You got my attention. What's up?" So I laid out all the charts in front of him. All the charts, about eight of them. All number one, right? And then I pulled the record out and I handed it to him and said, "Lolly and I produced this."
Mm-hmm.
And it's number one in all these stations. And he said, "Son of a bitch, you got me. You got me." And so he still gave us another couple of years contract. I think it was Wood Queen of New Orleans I'm talking about. I mean, I'm losing my place too. But yeah, that's how that happened.
You know, I always wondered, I was a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s. And of course, we had a playlist and we would play the top, you know, and we would get records coming into the station, you know, free records. But I always wondered how a song would catch on and who was responsible for making that, you know, playable on a radio station. So you said you went personally to radio stations?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, play the record. You know what I'm saying?
So you knocked on doors, basically.
Yes, but it means something. It becomes a kind of something personal to
right.
the radio station people when an artist brings it in himself.
Right.
Not a promotion man, but an artist walks in and says, "Hey, man, I want to bring that person," you know. So I added that personal touch in that neighborhood.
Huh. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought you went away. Well, I'm so sorry about Lolly. That was a big loss, and also Tony. Tony died in 2009. Lolly, I guess, in 2010, right?
Yeah.
Yep. That's a big blow.
Let me hang legs.
Yeah.
I like to bicycle.
That was a huge loss. Huge loss.
Yeah. So let me hang. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do.
Right, right.
At that time, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do, but I had a lot of friends out there that had it and they cared about me.
So, oh, yeah. I'm so sure.
My friend Earl Miller took me in and said, I know you're going to change it, but come on, Roger. Stay with me.
Right.
And he was the number one photographer for Penthouse Magazine.
Really? Huh.
Earl Miller. Anyway, he brought me in and he gave me his guest house closer to the back in Carbon Canyon over there.
Right, right.
So he gave me a job spraying baby oil and water on the girls on the plaster there.
Uh-huh.
You know? I did it for 3.5 years.
Oh, wow.
I worked in house for a while, too.
Yeah.
And then after that, over then I became a conference.
You guys headline the inaugural Indigenous Peoples Day event with your son and also your daughter, right?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Yeah, and the Black Eyed Peas were there. This was recent, October 2018 at Grand Park.
That's right. The very first one in Los Angeles. And we're going to do it again every year.
Very recent.
Yeah, because our friends there at the city, in the city government
right.
want us to do it every year now. But we put it together. Actually, my son PJ put it together.
Oh, did he really? Huh.
He's a very good organizer.
How you
put it together?
Yep. Next generation, man. He's going to take over.
That's right, man.
That's right. Just he's following in your footsteps.
Yeah, well, he's bright and he's intelligent and he's pushing good hearts.
Good, good.
Cares about people, you know?
Yeah, we need that. You know, we need some new blood, man, to take over the music industry. Some good blood.
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah. Also, congratulations. You were awarded with the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Indigenous Music Awards. Also,
thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Congratulations on that.
I'm going to an award show in Canada this next month.
Oh, great.
It'll be nice.
And you were also in a movie. You were in a movie in 2017, Rumble?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
So you've been busy.
Yes, I have. I've been busy. And I'm going to stay busy, too.
Good.
You can't even move in time, you know? Before AIDS catches up, you got
to
stay here.
I know. You have to. You have to keep busy. You have to keep busy.
You got to keep moving, man.
That's right, man. Yeah. Pat, here's your final question, man. Here's a question I ask everybody. I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, My brother.
Your brother, Lolly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But above that, I was like, great. There's so many fucking talented people that's in.
Well, you played. You,
son, I'm doing this collaborating with son.
Yeah.
I just love collaborating with good people. I mean, I just enjoy that. I do my best work like that.
Yeah.
And I did. There's so many talented people out there. I would love to collaborate with every one of them.
You played with so many of the great legends.
And you too, brother.
Yeah. How about Hendrix? How about Hendrix? What, you know, play...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jimi Hendrix, yes. What a brother he was. Did
you jam with him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What a brother he was, man.
Yeah.
He was a brother. That's a brother. You know? He was a punctuation, he was a period, bro.
Right. You know, we lost so many great music legends, man. It's just, you know,
Oh, yeah. It's
hard to believe, you know?
Yeah, I love musicians, I love players, and I love the courage because it takes courage to do this.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, that sacrifice a lot.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of wits to go with it, sometimes it comes with it, but still it's a sacrifice.
Right.
And I'm real proud of all these young players and stuff, you know. I think they're great.
Yeah, so do I.
They never give up. That's all I say. If you stay in it long enough, you'll get your opportunity. I always say my philosophy. It's a long line of musicians who can do things. And as far as the eye can see and beyond, the line is from here to fucking Jupiter. And everyone gets to the front of the line. Okay?
Yeah.
You get out of line. If you step out of the line to do any other kind of job, you know, it's the
you
can't go back to the line. You have to go back to the same spot. I've done that before. You have to go to the back of the line. So my advice is stay in line.
Right. Well, you and Lolly worked your asses off, man. Oh, my gosh. So you were smart. You know, they say the only way, you know, you can go on YouTube and do anything you want and all that. That doesn't mean anything. You got to go out there and you got to play clubs, right? You got to play. Yeah.
You can do it.
Exactly.
Clubs is a school of knowledge and music. Clubs is where you learn the real shit, you know?
Right.
Yeah, how to explain to people and what people like and what you like. It's communication. You gotta go out and play. You gotta play for real. You can't just play at home and jam. You know, all that stuff. You know, you gotta go out and play for people.
That's right.
Yeah. And
yep.
That's my advice. Find a club gig. Find a club gig and play it with as many people as you can to learn. And then before you know it, it'll be better than you know.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what everybody says. They say you gotta get out there, you know.
Gotta get out there and play, man.
Right.
Pick the people. Pick the people. And that's how you learn. And that's how you know what you got it and not what they're any good. And you learn what they tell you in so many ways.
Pat, I want to thank you, man, so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
You're a great person. You've done so much for the music. You know, you're the pioneer of so many different things. You know, you got a great spirit, and you know, I love your positive attitude.
Thank you, brother. God bless you for that. And I don't get much of that. So God bless that. Well, but I appreciate it when I do.
You're awesome, man. And let's keep in touch, all right? I'll promote you guys in Canada. I'll promote PJ. And just keep it going.
You got it. got it, bro. And if you need me for anything at any time, you call me and let me know. You got my number.
I do. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thanks, bro.
God bless you, man.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank... first of all, you can purchase Pat's book entitled Come and Get Your Love, a celebratory ode to Redbone, 1939 through present. It's a fantastic book, and I suggest everybody buy it. It's by Pat Vegas and Jim Hoffman as a contributor, and it's also available at Amazon.com. For more information about Pat Vegas and Redbone, visit www.redbone.be/ or www.facebook.com/pat.vegas.1. Very special thanks to Asla Cortese for arranging this interview, and I'm hoping I'm saying her name right, for arranging this interview with Pat Vegas, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of VBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, a true story of an eclectic American family and their wacky family business, available now at Amazon.com. And I promise you will live it. And have a great week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on VBS Radio, Station 1.